Welcome back to Extra Shot, our pod spilling the funniest stories in sport this week. I'm Jack. Zach is with me as ever.
I am here.
Hello. Good to have you here. This week on the pod, Messi's hungry for blood. Anthony Joshua suffers a playground jibe from Tyson Fury, and Jesse Lingard is up to his old tricks. But first, Zach, did you watch the Arsenal-Porto game?
I did, yeah. I watched it last night.
We're obviously recording this on Wednesday. It was last night.
Yeah, I thought it was a good game. It was not the most action-packed, but very tense.
No, I actually didn't even watch the game, but the fallout afterwards, there are a few funny bits. So first of all, did you see Porto's manager, Sergio Conceição, has accused Mikel Arteta of insulting his family during the match?
Yeah, he was really losing the plot at the end.
Yeah, so he said, during the game, Arteta turned to the bench and in Spanish, he insulted my family. It must be a Spanish coach thing because it was the same thing with Pep Guardiola. I'm pretty sure he's just getting confused by Spanish swearing. Conceição is Portuguese. And obviously in Spanish, they say like puta madre. And we talked a few weeks ago about Barcelona manager Xavi, who said, I will fucking shit on your mother.
Yeah.
But just like, he was just saying it in general.
He's just taking it way too personally. Because I saw afterwards, he was like, yes. So he said an insult about my family and the family member who he insulted is no longer with us.
It's like his mother.
His mum. I think he's just basically, I think Arteta's just been said the equivalent of like, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Something like that. And he's been like, what?
Yeah. But it's interesting he had a go at Pep. He said that Pep did the same. But actually, his clash with Pep at the time, he said, Guardiola spoke about our country using ugly words. So I think he's suggesting that Pep said like, fuck Portugal or something, which I find hard to believe. Yeah. And he also accused Thomas Tuchel of insulting him after the group game with Bayern Munich.
Oh, really? What did Tuchel say?
I don't know. He just said, I was insulted by this man. So I don't know what the...
I think Conceição sounds like he's maybe a bit oversensitive.
Yeah, thin-skinned for this game. Is it that or is it just a sort of like extremely devious, long game, shithousery thing?
Yeah, I don't know. Is it always after they've lost games that he's...
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's a lot of shit that gets thrown around on the touchline.
Yeah.
Surely, like, that's just part of the game, isn't it?
Yeah, don't go crying about it.
Yeah.
Part of the game. There was another nice moment after the game as well on CBS News with Jamie Carragher. So you know how the vibe on CBS is like this constant, everything needs to be like a joke. It's really matey.
Yeah.
It's like quite grating at
times.
It's kind of irritating. It was refreshing at first, now it's a bit annoying. But it basically results in this atmosphere where Carragher is always trying to crack jokes. And after the game, he was made to wear an Arsenal shirt, I think some forfeit he lost. And Kate Abdo, the presenter, said she would never wear that because she's loyal. And Jamie ended up making a pretty weird comment about Kate's boyfriend, Malik Scott.
You've got to wear it next, and for the last part, you've got to wear it.
I'm loyal. I'm loyal.
To who?
Manchester United,
big man. Thank you very much.
Looks nice.
Not to Malik.
What? Why would you even say that?
Sorry?
He hasn't had a mention in the show yet.
not loyal to Malik.
No, yeah. Well, she's basically saying that she cheats on her boyfriend.
Yeah, her fiance, actually. Also, Malik Scott is a boxing trainer. He's Deontay Wilder's trainer, so.
Oh, okay.
Personally, but, wouldn't be making gags like that about him.
With him, yeah.
In front of like a million fans. I think that is just, in the moment, Carragher's like, think of a joke, and panics and just makes a really weird gag.
I like her reaction to it as well. She's like, what? Why would you say that?
Yeah, her face just drops. Yeah. How dare you?
Yeah.
Be good if he'd had to apologise like an hour later, you know, when that happens on TV.
Poor old Malik is. She's got caught in the crossfire of CBS's bants.
Yeah, it will get you. Right, what else you got for us, Zach?
So I'm going to start off with Jesse Lingard, who began this season sort of in the wilderness, really, after a pretty underwhelming spell with Nottingham Forest last year. But he's now moved to FC Seoul in Korea. And it's fair to say that they're going absolutely mental there. So Jesse arrived at the airport a couple of weeks ago and he was absolutely mobbed by fans and by press. One fan gave him a wooden flute. You know, he does that sort of like weird Pied Piper celebration where he's like whistling on a flute.
It's been a while since I saw him school.
Yeah, yeah. But so they gave him that. He made his debut, I think about 10 days ago, in a away match against hated rivals Gwangju FC. And tickets for that match sold out in 2.5 minutes. And he then last weekend made his home debut and it broke K-League attendance records. There were 51,670 people there. Whoa. Just double the average attendance for FC Seoul last season.
So they don't really ever sell out usually.
No, I don't think
so. 2.5 minute sellout, that's like Taylor Swift territory.
Yeah.
Because of Lingard. There's no other reason why it would sell out that fast.
Just the big FC Seoul Gwangju rivalry.
We should eliminate all other possible reasons before accepting
I assume it was connected because they also, FC Seoul had to set up a special shop outside the stadium on Saturday, which they called the Lingard Zone, which specialised, it only sold Lingard merch.
And what merch? Just shirts?
I think shirts, I'm not sure
action
what else.
Figure? Like when you pull the string, it does a TikTok dance. You know, it's like J-Ling celebration.
Yeah, it's going to be J-Ling's caps. Crap. But apparently there were, for 4 hours before kickoff, there were queues for as far as that I could see.
Queuing 4 hours to get a Jesse Lingard key ring.
Yeah, exactly.
They like camping overnight territory.
I don't know. Yeah, I'd like to think so, yeah. I don't know, it struck me as a bit of an odd move when I first heard about him moving to the K-League. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, actually, I feel like Korea really suits Jesse Lingard with his whole sort of Fortnite J-Ling's vibe. Like, I can definitely picture him doing TikTok dances with K-pop stars. And
he's got quite a sort of like bubblegum pop star vibe, and that is...
Yeah, he's quite childlike.
Yeah, and that, and I don't know, it fits quite well with their like intense celeb culture.
Yeah, so he's living in a hotel with his best friend Sunny Digwa, who seems to follow him everywhere. And the hotel is in Gangnam.
Oh, nice.
Which you may remember from Gangnam Style.
That is like a trendy district as
well.
Yeah,
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a good move then.
Yeah.
He was literally playing for no one before, but still, like...
It beats soulless desert compound on the outskirts of Riyadh. Yeah, although he probably would earn 10 times as much money there.
Yeah, taking the money out still, of it, though. I'd rather go and be, like, in Korea, which is like a cool culture, and you're just getting mobbed. And people are camping out overnight to buy your shirt.
Yeah, definitely. And he's didn't take long for Jesse to get up to his old tricks. So Korean tabloids are reporting that Jesse Lingard is sliding into the DMs of Korea's Kim Kardashian. So Korea's Kim Kardashian is an extremely weird looking Instagram model called Aptly. She looks very strange. She's got possibly the tiniest head I've ever seen, and then absolutely massive tits and bum.
Is her head small or is it the contrast?
I don't know. To me, she looks like a sort of AI image generated thing.
Don't rule it out. It would be funny if he ended up sliding in the DMs of a robot.
She definitely doesn't look human to me. But she, this account, human or not, posted a picture of Jesse Lingard messaging her on Instagram just saying hi.
She's been outed already.
That's the basis of the story. But
in the interest of research, I actually had a quick look at her Insta. Yeah, 2 million followers. It says she's a former banker.
Oh yeah.
And then it looks like she must have had surgery, right? That's not, it does say all natural on her Insta, but I mean, like, have a Google. It's pretty insane proportions. And all her captions, I translated a few. You know how normally, like, well, I don't know if you're familiar, but a lot of these sort of like Insta hottie stars, they often do like these sort of like fortune cookie wisdom stuff where they'll just be like, you know, like, banish the haters from your life, or like, never a false step is taken by standing still, or whatever. But hers are all about the weather. She's just like, oh, it's drizzly, take an umbrella.
She thinks she's trying to appeal to Jesse's English fans.
What do English people like? They're obsessed with the weather. Well, she's picked up a few more by posting that screenshot.
Yeah, hopefully. To be honest, I think Jesse seems to be getting on well so far. And it's probably a good thing that he's keeping himself busy, because he spent the last 6 months unemployed posting weird TikTok videos from training camps in Dubai. There was this one that I'm going to play.
You coming out? No. Got a drink? No. Oh, this person was saying this about this person. I don't care, bro. I don't want to know. No negativity. Positive vibes, aura, energy, high vibrations, parties. Nah, bruh. Done with that. Done with that. Training? Yep. Gym? Yep. Family? Yep. Football? Yep. Bro, it's all mindset. You get your mind right, your body right. I'm a beast, bruh. Beast!
he sounds like those like 13-year-olds that you encounter on Xbox Live that it's impossible to ever proper conversation with, because they're just coming out with like weird soundbite things,
slogans.
Yeah,
I think that is quite transparently his agent being like, a lot of managers have a reservation that you like don't take things seriously and you fuck around. He's like, well, just post a video.
Yeah,
it's so
that was sort of his like, come and get me, please, to clubs. Right?
And do you remember the week before, Paul Scholes, Lingard had posted a pic in the gym, and Paul Scholes commented under it, being like, "Are you ever going to play football again, or are you just going to fuck around in the gym?" So I feel like it's a response.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, overall, I'm quite pro Jesse and career. I think I think
it suits him, and it's obviously doing good things for the league as well, for its like ticket sales and profile. So
yeah, and it's great for Apley's Instagram reach, which is what I really care about.
Yeah, look forward to more updates.
Yeah, we will keep you very. How did he play? Do you know,
he missed a sitter apparently. On his debut, he came on for the last 13 minutes, got a yellow card, and in his second game, he apparently did a really good pass. According to Apley,
he's clutching at straws,
and then missed a chance.
Well, I'll give him time to bed in. Now, when you put a man like Samuel Eto'o in charge of your football association, you're gonna get the odd scandal. Sammy is the head of the Cameroon FA these days, and last time we checked in with him was during the World Cup in Qatar, when he kneed a cameraman in the face during a fight outside a stadium. It's a good clip. I recommend looking it up. I'll link to it in the show notes. And at the time, he was also fending off three separate child support lawsuits with the statement, "I don't care if they all die, leave me alone." Which is one way of defending yourself.
That's so brutal.
I don't think that's how it works with child support. Well, I don't want them. Anyway, Sammy, who's, you know, he's like a legendary Barcelona striker, he's now embroiled in a new scandal about match fixing in Cameroon. His former deputy, Nijala Kwan Jr., has accused Eto'o of fixing youth matches to help his friend's teams win.
Is that just as a favour for his team, for his mates, or is this it is some the accusation. Kind of like betting thing?
I know. I think the accusation is literally to help his friend. Like, one of them got promoted, so maybe there's some money involved in that. But yeah, I mean, it's youth matches. So like,
why is Samuel Eto'o getting involved in
precisely?
This? Surely, like, he's surely got enough money from his Barcelona. He's clearly, didn't he play for like Anzi Makakala?
Yeah, I mean,
like
he played for Chelsea, Inter Milan, and Barca. He's wedged. But I don't know. Something's more important than money.
Doesn't need
Zach.
To be.
Such as Victoria United getting promoted. Anyway, Nijala, his deputy who accused him, has described it as the most scandalous incident in the history of mankind, which is probably a little bit over the top.
Top three, maybe.
Yeah, Watergate, this, and
that guy who coughed during the questions on who wants to be a millionaire.
That actually was the most scandalous incident
in the history of mankind.
In the history of mankind, those are the big three. We'll put it in the top three. Anyway, in fairness to Nijala, he did show this threatening text message that he claims Eto'o sent him. And the message says, "I am the mafia of this revolution, and in this specific mafia, we do not betray our leaders. If you fuck with me, be ready to carry the consequences."
It's like he's organising a coup.
Yeah. I mean, I actually think, you know, footballers typically are not the most lucid types. Quite impressed with this, like, threat. It's quite colourful. Good writing.
Yeah, I mean, it's either that or knee you in the face. So probably take that.
He's got many different sides to him. The mafia of this revolution. It doesn't actually mean anything, does it? It's just threatening. Anyway, I think Sammy denies sending this text, but fortunately a few scandals have come along that have diverted attention away from it. So last month, Cameroon got knocked out of the African Cup of Nations in the last 16, which was seen as a big failure in Cameroon. And Sammy offered to resign, but his committee at the FA refused to accept the resignation, which is, I think that's absolute dictator 101, isn't it? Straight out of the playbook. Next up, you just need like an election where you get 99% of the vote. And now, conveniently, another scandal's popped up. Cameroon have banned 62 players for lying about their age.
That's a bit of a long-running thing there, isn't it?
Yeah, in fact, in the last 3 years, they have banned a total of 122 for age fraud, as it's known. One of the ones banned most recently was Wilfred Douala, who was like this sensation in the AFCON because he was... well, he claimed to be 17, which would have made him the youngest player in AFCON history. But
I saw a picture of him. He definitely doesn't look 17.
He hasn't got the cheekbones of a 17-year-old. He looks pretty wizened, if you ask me. I don't actually fully understand the motive behind age fraud. Like, maybe it's to look more attractive to clubs.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess if they're considering signing you, it's like, wow, this guy's fucking good. He's only 16.
He's 14.
Yeah. But surely you can tell.
Yeah.
And they're not, isn't there like a medical
These guys got made to have MRIs and then they got banned. But I think you're looking at like bone density at that point, which to me doesn't sound that accurate, but I'm no medical expert. But they've always had this thing in Cameroon. So in the 90s, they had this player called Toby Mimbo, who at every international tournament he went to, he presented a new birth certificate and he was just getting younger with each one. Like, he wasn't even staying the same age, he was literally getting younger. We headlined that story, Benjamin Bowton, which I'm very pleased with. If you like puns. Anyway, I'm sure Eto will be up to more.
Do you think it was the same like FIFA admin officer who had to keep going back to the office? Just like every time he comes in, he's got a few more grey hairs on his head, but he's like 6 months younger.
Yeah, Toby, I just don't understand this. But also, at that point, why do you need to get younger? Again, it must be club career.
Prolong your
stuff.
Career, yeah. I guess.
They did. Cameroon had that guy, Roger Miller, who played in the World Cup at like 42. Mm. He was really good.
Christ, he says he's 22. Suspiciously quick for his age.
Yeah, if anything, I would lie in the opposite direction. So everyone was like, fuck. Yeah,
do you think that's what happens when you get to a certain age? Then you start going backwards again. Yeah,
can you believe he's 60?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So the other big sporting event of last weekend was, of course, the big boxing showdown between Anthony Joshua and Francis Ngannou. It was all kind of over before it began, really, because AJ delivered a brutal knockout in the second round. It was a fucking serious punch. Mm. It was punch of the century, newspapers described it as. Did you say it was captured by Jose Mourinho? He was sat in the sat ringside and got it on his phone.
And next to him was Ronaldo Nazario.
Really?
Yeah. Those pals.
Yeah, they also popped out. They were presenting the trophy at the Egyptian Cup final the day before,
I think. Of course they were.
Tour of the Middle
East. That's what you do when you're semi-retired. Yeah. I think Mourinho is really good mates with AJ, isn't he? I've seen him before, like, congratulating him.
Oh, right, that makes sense. With this fight, I'm always sort of like, how much can you really read into it? Because Francis Ngannou, this is his second boxing fight ever, and he's now fought AJ and Tyson Fury, lost them both. Tyson, he did pretty well against, but still, it's like he's a UFC guy. It's basically like getting the like padel champion to play Novak Djokovic at Wimbledon. It's like similar sport, but it's not quite the same.
I think the contrast between the fights was so big because he did so well against Fury and arguably should have won, whereas This was just
a knockout.
Second round. It's really stopped the fight, didn't it? After the knockdown.
I mean, congratulations to AJ anyway. Although the warm glow of victory was soon doused by a jive from his old foe, Tyson Fury, who was on commentary duties for the fight. So after the knockout, Anthony Joshua is being interviewed and he said, "Fuck Tyson Fury. I don't like trash-talking people." So everyone was sort of scratching their heads about what spiteful barb the Gypsy King might have thrown AJ's way, and Anthony followed up by explaining, "Yeah, I heard him say on commentary something like, 'Oh, I'm here to do commentary about these two sausages.'"
Is that it? Yeah. God, of a sausage.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the absolute tamest
playground stuff.
It's like what your nursery school teacher might call you, a silly sausage. Sorry, that's the trash talking.
That was the trash talking. I mean, actually, Tyson was actually being really nice about AJ before it. Like, he tipped him to win. I think he said, he said something like, oh, us Brits stay together or something like that. Like, also, it could have been a lot worse if they'd spoken to Tyson's dad, John. Do you remember when his other son, Tommy Fury, fought Logan Paul in some like lame influencer YouTuber fight? And they put John on a video call with Logan. And this is what he said.
What did you say?
Listen, you know now you're swearing now. You know when Tommy knocks you out, don't you? You're going to bend your girlfriend over and do her like a dog. In front of you.
Blimey.
So I'm telling you straight.
you're cringe.
That's how I come up.
My favourite bit about that clip is when he says it, you just see Tyson and Tommy Fury, who are sitting either side of their dad, just head in their hands. Like, even they're cringing. Yeah. Do her like a dog.
Do her like a dog.
So horrible.
I mean, John Fury is a horrible guy. Yeah. Also very strange. The last I heard of him, he was saying he spent Christmas alone in the woods eating rabbit stew and anything else he could kill with his dog.
I mean, not a huge surprise that he's made to spend Christmas Day on his own. Yeah.
After what happened last year.
Yeah. He did like a decent stint in the slammer for gouging a bloke's eye
out.
Yeah,
he's a horrible guy.
Yeah. Horrible fucker. Yeah. Tyson, Fury and AJ do have some history. Like, I know he was being nice about him before this fight, but because they've always talked about fighting, and didn't they have some trash talk?
I can't remember.
Actually, the quote I can find is Tyson Fury said, "I don't hate Joshua. I don't dislike the guy. He's doing well. He's got a good body. I bet he's got a big cock and all. Probably I wish I had it, but who cares?" That's actually pretty funny. I also saw him, maybe it was even to AJ, his other like nursery school insults. He called someone, "You big feather duster." I actually really like his style of insulting. Yeah. But yeah, AJ's taking that one a bit sensitive. AJ is quite a sensitive soul. If you saw the Louis Theroux,
I haven't seen that, no.
It's really good. I was one of the few people who came out of it really liking him. Everyone else seemed really annoyed by him, but he's quite sensitive.
Mm.
Anyway, he's trousered.
Well, oversensitive, I think, judging by this.
Yeah, he trousered about 30 million for that fight against Ngannou, so don't feel too bad for it. Now, one of the joys of leagues like the MLS is having some of the greatest players of all time slot into squads filled with absolute shit munchers. But when Leo Messi joined Inter Miami, it was clear that some heads were going to have to roll because the gap between his ability and theirs was just too large. And even while Messi was negotiating his contract, Inter Miami got rid of Phil Neville, who was manager at the time, denying us the dream prospect of Phil Neville giving Leo Messi a team talk.
I love that. I love the idea of Messi's contract talks with them being in like, just to be clear, Phil's not going to be there anymore.
You've got one demand. Yeah. We don't need a private jet. Just get rid of Phil Neville. And actually, to be fair, Miami were bottom of the MLS when Neville left, so it was probably time. Anyway, with the manager gone, the squad needed a bit of an overhaul next. And during the recent off-season, Messi's old pals Sergio Busquets and Luis Suarez were brought in to replace Miami stalwarts like Schneider Borgelin and Phil Neville's son, Harvey. Poor old Harvey. He's now plying his trade at second tier side Loudoun United in Virginia. Okay. They sent him out on loan. He is still technically an Inter Miami player, but he's on loan in America's second tier.
Oh, was he only picked because his dad was the manager?
Alex Ferguson used to do that, didn't he? He had a son on the books for a bit.
Oh yeah.
So it does happen. But do you remember Inter Miami played that? They played a friendly against Barcelona, and before it, Phil Neville said, "This is the biggest game in our history," friendly. And then taking the game really seriously, on the hour mark, he just brought his son on. So, can't be that important a game. Harvey Neville's on the pitch. Anyway, with those transfers made and Leo's old pals brought in, it looked like Messi's bloodlust was finally sated. And the new season started last month with his new dream team. That was until a photo popped up from one of Inter Miami's first games this season, and it shows Messi in a team huddle, and he's got Busquets on one side and Suarez on the other. And in the middle of them, barking orders, is former Newcastle defender DeAndre Yedlin, who looks like he's being like, "Sergio, you need to stop giving away PKs. Like, Suarez, you better track back this time." And like, you can almost sense the disbelief from these like three players. They've got about 20 Champions Leagues between them, and they're getting lectured by a, American international DeAndre Yedlin. Anyway, within days of this picture popping up, Yedlin, who is Inter Miami's most capped player of all time, had been traded to FC Cincinnati. Gone. I just picture Messi after that team talk, just like giving a Caesar's thumb down for DeAndre Yedlin. Get rid.
So I know that many of our audience will have been on tenterhooks this week for an update on Moosegate, the huge story that we brought to you last week about Dallas Seavey and the Iditarod. So just a little recap in case anybody missed last week's episode, but there is a huge, in fact, event going on in Alaska right now, the Iditarod. It's a dog sled race that traces a 1,000-mile course through the Alaskan wilderness. And there was a dramatic event last week when Dallas Seavey, the reigning champion, his dog sled was hit by a moose on the loose. He became entangled in the ropes and injured his dogs, and he ended up having to shoot the moose and then gut it in the snow, pull its rancid intestines out and leave them in the snow.
And that's because
there was a race rule.
What, if you hit a moose, you kill a moose,
you got to gut the moose. That's
simple as.
But shortly after we went on air, we received a dramatic update from this story. So I was looking into this. I also discovered that this incident took place on Dallas Seavey's birthday. So, you know, we've all had shit birthdays, but I think pulling the rancid intestines out of the half-ton moose carcass in the Alaskan wilderness is probably up there.
In like minus 70 conditions.
Minus 70, yeah. So anyway, that night, Dallas set up camp. He was digging his foxhole in the frozen Alaskan tundra and sheltering from this blizzard in like minus 73 degree conditions. And he was, you know, he was setting up his little camp. He got out his benzene camp stove to thaw out some frozen moose meat for a little birthday dinner for himself. Probably still like picking bits of intestines out of his matted beard, when suddenly there was a buzz on his satellite phone and a message came through from the race organizers who'd found the moose carcass and had ruled that, in their words, the moose was not sufficiently gutted. And they were going to be slapping him with a 2-hour time penalty. So you just imagine, you're just like, oh, fuck's sake, could this birthday get any worse? But I've just checked in on the race and I'm glad to report that Dallas Seavey has won the Iditarod. He's got a record 6th race win.
Oh, so he's like the Djokovic.
Yeah. He's incredible. He's sealed it despite the penalty.
Surely this is his most famous
win. Despite his
shit
birthday. Yeah. No, he said, I knew something special was going to happen, and this was a special race.
And that something special was gutting a wild animal, digging out its entrails after it savaged my beloved dog. Yeah. On my birthday. Does that mean the race is always on his birthday?
I don't know. But I guess so.
Next year.
Yeah, I thought listeners might enjoy that update.
Do we know how the other guy finished? The guy who came in and just goes, I just had to punch a moose on the nose out there.
I don't think he's crossed the finish line yet. It was literally this morning that Dallas Seavey crossed the line first.
That's so. Wednesday morning.
Yeah. So, I mean, people normally take between 8 and 15 days to finish this race. So, poor old Jesse something.
We should remind listeners that...
probably still holed up somewhere in a blizzard.
Yeah.
In Alaska.
Digging in the earth. Yeah. We should remind listeners also that this doesn't normally happen. This is like the first moose attack since the 80s, isn't it?
It's the first moose death. First time a competitor has been forced to kill a moose. First one had to kill him with an axe, which is even more brutal.
Or just hack it down.
Yeah.
I mean, take a gun with you, sure. Right, staying in the world of niche sports, everyone knows that professional cycling is bent as a 9-bob note. It's absolutely riddled with doping. But I hadn't realised that illicit drug use had spread to the amateur tier of cycling until I heard about this race in Valencia last weekend. So there's this race in Valencia where drug testers paid a surprise visit. And at the start of the race, 182 people had entered. But then these drug control signs went up, which means that at the finish line, they'll be randomly testing people who finish. And out of the 180 people who entered, 130 pulled out immediately with, they were citing punctures or injuries. Which is, I mean, I had no idea that it was that widespread.
Yeah. I love this image of like the cyclist just like veering off course and just going down like a sheer rock face to escape the doping control.
Yeah, like stabbing your tires, anything to avoid it. One rider who did finish, Alvaro Maza, told local press, "This is a fucking joke." Couldn't have put it better.
Yeah.
Does that mean like, you know, your guys you see on long, but, you know, amateur rides on a weekend, you see like blokes in lycra, like, are they doing fucking midnight blood transfusions?
Yeah,
when you cycle to work, do I need to check your piss, sir?
You can do, yeah, so
might have a look anyway. And that Jeremy Vine, have a look at him as well. That's mental that people don't. What sort of doping can you do as an amateur?
I don't know. And why are you doing it? Like, what is the, is it just for sort of cred on your Strava WhatsApp group?
Yeah, I guess probably amateur cycling goes to a more competitive level, but
yeah,
still doping. And speaking of brazen doping, we talked a few weeks ago about James Magnussen, the Aussie swimmer who is going to take performance enhancing drugs and try and break the world record in the 100 meter freestyle. That's part of the enhanced games, you know, this idea of like the Olympics without drug testing. And Magnussen said, "I'm going to juice to the gills and break the record." And this sent the sporting establishment into uproar, and no less than Sebastian Coe, Lord Coe, the boss of World Athletics, branded it moronic. He said it was bollocks, and he promised bans for any athletes who entered the enhanced games. But James Magnussen's thirst for the gear should come as no surprise after what went down at the 2012 Olympics in London. Magnussen was... he was like the favourite to win the 100-metre freestyle. He was in this really hotly tipped relay team as well. And during a pre-games training camp in Manchester, him and his relay pals were bored, so they did what you or I would do. They got high on sleeping pills, like prescription ones, and then they like did a series of quite tame pranks, like prank calling other athletes in the hotel. I think they were playing knockdown ginger at one point. So, like, really tame stuff, really.
It's real, it's like school trip pranks.
Yeah, it's cling filming the toilet seat territory, yeah. Isn't it? That actually would have been a lot funnier if they cling filmed the toilet seat. Too drowsy for that. Anyway, although it was quite tame, it led Aussie swimming blazers to ban all their athletes from taking sleeping pills at the Olympics. And, you know, it's easy to forget, but actually sleeping pills are rife in sport because you get a lot of adrenaline and nerves before a big game or race or whatever. And a lot of these guys were relying on them. And James Magnussen subsequently said that he barely slept for the whole Olympic Games and because he was so nervous and he had no sleeping pills. And when it came to his big race, he missed out on gold by 0.01 seconds, which is the smallest possible margin you can lose by in an Olympic race. And the hotly...
it's the sort of margin that an extra half an hour in bed might have done.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Or, you know, pumping yourself full of anabolic steroids. Yeah. He'll get that.
So is this why he's now, do you think that's his justification for doing the enhanced games now? Because his enhanced games just going to be loads of sleeping pills the night before.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going wild. I just want to get a good night's sleep. But I think so because he just missed on the gold. He got silver, but he said like, I was gutted with silver. I didn't want it. And then he got bronze in 2016 and then hasn't been at another Olympics. So, you know, it kind of cost him his dream. Mm.
These pranks.
Yeah.
The Australian swimming
the lesson.
Body.
Yeah. And actually the relay team he was in ended up coming fourth, and the Aussie press slightly hysterically described it as the biggest defeat since Gallipoli, where like 50,000 ASNAC troops were slain.
Feels like there's been quite a lot of hyperbole in this, this episode.
I feel like
we've had the most scandalous event, most scandalous episode in the history of mankind, and the biggest defeat since Gallipoli.
Yeah, I feel like the Aussies quite often invoke Gallipoli for any comparison. I don't think a relay team coming fourth because they didn't get 40 winks quite counts. Anyway, so we'll see how James fares and other athletes, but yeah, that's his history with drugs.
Interesting. So 2 years ago, Ben Brereton-Diaz was up there with independence leader Bernardo Higgins and those miners who got stuck underground in the pantheon of Chilean national heroes. So he's got a pretty interesting story. So up until 2021, he was simply known as Ben Brereton from Stoke. And he was a fairly average championship striker. And then suddenly he started absolutely banging them in for Blackburn. And around the same time, a Chilean video gamer called Alvaro Perez decided to play as Blackburn Rovers on Football Manager and discovered when Ben scored for him, he looked into his history and discovered that he had a Chilean mother. So decided then to start a social media campaign to get Ben picked for the Chile national team. And it worked. So eventually, 2021, he got called up and at that point decided to add Diaz to his name. So he's now called Ben Brereton Diaz, which sounds slightly more Chilean. He then made his debut against Messi, against Argentina, and got picked for the Copa America squad and starred in that run. He's like scored a couple of winning goals and became like Chile's number one national hero. Like fans renamed a street in Santiago after him. This one guy made a kid's birthday cake with Ben's face on the body of Christ.
That's very South American football, isn't it?
Yeah. He also became the face of an advertising campaign for Pepsi. So, like, big star in Chile.
The street they named after him, did they call it Brereton or Diaz?
I
guess Brereton Diaz.
Brereton Diaz, I guess. I don't actually know. But despite all of this, he never learned any Spanish. And the Chile manager, Ricardo Garissa, has finally lost patience with this and dropped him from his squad for some upcoming friendlies. So he said, "I would like him to learn Spanish. He was called up for the Copa America 2 years ago. He has had time to learn."
True.
Yeah.
Does he not have any from his mum? Or
Maybe he knows a few words.
Yeah, like dos cervezas, por favor.
Yeah, dos cerveza, por favor.
That reminds me, you know, who is it that has a player called Maximo Peroni? There's like a player, I think, in the Premier League. Yeah. Someone posted on Twitter when he signed just saying, "Your dad trying to order a beer in Spain." Maximo Peroni. Right, finally, there's a great article in The Athletic this week about Michael Edwards, who was the Liverpool sporting director, the visionary who brought in Jurgen Klopp, he brought in Mo Salah, and he left the club for a while, and Liverpool have just brought him back in an even more senior role. And Michael Edwards started off his career at Portsmouth under Harry Redknapp, and there's a few quite good anecdotes about like Harry getting to grips with early sort of football data systems. Like there's a game where Harry asks him, "Does your computer say we're going to win this week?" And Edwards says yes, and then they lose, and he just goes in really angrily, goes to Edwards, "Maybe your computer can play next week instead of the players." Just meaningless. But the glorious anecdote I wanted to share from that article was that Edwards once handed Harry Redknapp a CD with loads of like player data on it and was like, "Some really interesting data on here. Just like take a look when you get home. Let me know what you think." And Harry rang him later and was like, "Haven't been able to get it to play." And it turned out that Harry was putting the CD in the CD player in his car.
What was he expecting? Was he expecting that Edwards had like done a little audio recording of it?
I guess in Harry's world, CDs are for music and sound. That's just like the idea of a CD-ROM going in the computer's just...
That's great.
Yeah, really nice. Okay, I think that's about it for this week. Do check out our episode from Tuesday about Tino Asprilla. Some really fun stories about that. And actually, thanks to Willie, who wrote in saying, "I saw an interview with Tino Asprilla that said when he arrived at Newcastle Airport, he was being driven to the ground for the first time and a couple of women mooned him. And he just said, 'I'm at home now.'" Really nice. Thanks, Willie. Our live show, by the way, is sold out. It's sold out in between 36 and 48 hours. We're not sure. But that, I mean, that's Jesse Lingard territory, isn't it?
Yeah, that's Taylor Swift levels.
Yeah. So do expect a 4-hour queue at the merch stand, the Jack and Zach zone. That's sold out. We'll see about some other dates. That remains to be confirmed. And this Tuesday, I think we've got Brian Clough coming out for you. That's certainly coming out soon. Anyway, thanks a lot for now. Thanks, Zach.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening.